Good day, my friends. This is Craig Shapiro of the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast, and you are listening to my man, Gianluca, at the Tennis Lifestyle Podcast.
Welcome to the Tennis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Gianluca Sola. In this episode, I have an amazing chat with Craig Shapiro. Craig is the creator and host of the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast. I first came across Craig's podcast a few years ago when I started listening to podcasts. And since then, I've been hooked. It's my favorite tennis podcast. It really is excellent. Craig has amazing guests. Amazing interviews. He's really good at interviewing, at telling stories, at getting information out of these people. And he's also very enthusiastic, funny, but at the same time also very knowledgeable. So I really highly recommend it to anybody who's into podcasts. It's really worth listening to. Craig, not only is involved in podcasts, but he's been around tennis for many, many years. He was also the racket technician for Andre Agassi, and he toured the world with Agassi as well. So he's got some nice stories and met a lot of people also through that experience. And he's also been involved in broadcasting. He's worked for a few different broadcasting channels. He's written also stories and also produced some documentaries on Andre Agassi and also a short documentary, short video on Patrick Mouratoglou. He's very active on Instagram. I'll put all the details and links in the summary, in the details of the episode. So please follow him. It's really interesting and funny, especially his Instagram account. And I hope you enjoy the interview. Okay, thanks. Enjoy. Ciao, ciao. How are you doing?
I think I'm okay, man. Just I'm actually back from Las Vegas. I was in Las Vegas for a day. So I'm just back from Vegas, and you know, getting organized with my podcast, and I'm sponsoring a event. The Tenez event, spelled T-E-N-E-Z, this Saturday here in L.A. It's a sort of a round robin tennis party that this young woman named Claudia Gaviria does. So I got that sponsored, and you know, they put up my banner, and everyone that plays in the event gets a cookie of my face, so that's always nice, you know.
Is the cookie nice? Have you tried it?
It's an outstanding cookie, man. It's one of the greatest cookies that's ever been made. It's made with maple sugar in Montreal. One of my one of my listeners is the Biscuiterie de Montreal. So I hired them, and they made me 100 cookies of my face. So I think after this event this weekend, I'll have about, I don't know, 30 or 40 left. So
okay, fantastic. Maybe that's a business.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. You know, I didn't know I'd have cookies of my face this time in my life, but I do. And
okay.
We actually made them for Indian Wells. So I had them, and passed them out a little bit at Indian Wells, and then I got some left over. So that's it.
Are you always? I know you move around a lot. Are you actually always based in California or Los Angeles or?
Yeah, I'm LA and New York, I'd say.
But, okay.
My mailing address is indeed West Hollywood, California, which is, really just LA proper.
Yeah, Craig, before I all the topics I want to discuss with you, and also just start maybe with Indian Wells. But before we start there, I just wanted to say that I actually started listening to podcasts in 2019, and obviously loving the game of tennis, I looked up and ended up with three or four that I really enjoyed, and one of them was yours, which back then was, well, a few years ago, was Under Review, it was called. I must just say I started listening to them, and yours was by far my favorite. I'll go into that. We'll talk about it later. But I think just the quality of your guests and the way you're so comfortable and talking to them, it's just makes for a really interesting listen. And you basically were one of the main reasons I said, well, let's try and do a podcast. And mine is obviously nowhere near as good as yours, but you inspired me. And just before the pandemic, I said, let's give it a go. And the COVID was a bit of an excuse there to carry on with it. And here I am after 32 interviews, but I'm still very nervous when I interview someone. But thank you for inspiring me.
Hey, my pleasure, man. As long as you're having fun. When this COVID gets under control, I'm gonna get to South Africa. You're gonna teach me how to become a pizzaiolo.
I'll do that. I'll do that. You must you must come down here. Listen, Indian Wells, I know you were there because I follow you on social media. Were you there for the whole tournament?
No, you know what?
Yeah.
I was there from the Monday morning the tournament began.
Okay.
But you know, that tournament doesn't really get rolling until that first weekend.
Yeah.
I think Wednesday the main draw begins. Qualies were Monday. I've actually I contributed to Racquet Magazine, and they had an event at the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs, featuring Vika Azarenka, that I produced the event, and so I was there the first Monday, and I was there up until the Friday morning. I left before the men's semis and the women's final, everything. I missed all that.
But just looking at it, I mean, it's always been my favorite tournament. I've never been there, probably together with Rome. And but just looking at it on TV, watching this year, I don't know, it came across as very like lacked atmosphere. Is that
Yeah, it
sort
was
of the feeling?
extremely. Yeah, no. It was extremely anemic, and it never got going from the first session until, I mean, the middle that last Thursday. There was it was wide. It was There was nobody there. For those of us who were there, it was a blast. I mean, it was wild. You could go right down into the front row of the matches, and there were no lines for anything. But after day after day of that, you kind of felt like you were in like a ghost town of a tournament. It was a little bit crazy.
But why was
And
that? Did they have I didn't understand. Was there limits on people entering or ticket prices?
No,
What was the
I think that there was probably simply changing the dates, I think probably did a lot of people in. People don't really start their vacation. They don't start their time down there until around Thanksgiving, so another few weeks from now in November. I think that has something to do with it. I think that tennis did a dismal job of promoting the change of dates. I think that, and I would say that the tournament, the WTA, the ATP, just did a dismal job of doing that. And there was a, there's sort of a, it's unclear, you know, regarding ticket sales, how they were handled, but there was a dearth of tickets available in the secondary markets on like StubHub. And then I think that the good seats in the main stadium, Stadium One, it's on, they weren't for sale for like for each session. They were sold as packages, and the tournament didn't pivot from that. So it was really, really, it was really poorly attended. And I think that it impacted, I feel like it impacted the players. I think the players, kind of fed off of the lack of energy, and there wasn't that much good tennis, to be very honest.
I was saying it's my favorite tournament, but this year's the first year I thought it was very disappointing. I mean, even under this whole COVID thing, we've had some great tournaments. So, do you think Larry Ellison maybe is also, is he still interested or,
He was there. He was there. I guess he did not attend the men's final, which, you know, was kind of, you know, kind of unusual. But listen, you know, you can't take away the fact that, you know, Cam Norrie has had a career year. Him winning this tournament was incredible. You know, he beat Tommy Paul. Third set, he broke Tommy Paul four times. Then he went into his next match against Dimitrov and routined him. You know, he routined him, and he just never lost steam after he had that tough match against Tommy Paul. So I mean, you know, Cam Norrie had the tournament of his life. And listen, you win Indian Wells, I don't care where, when, how. That's a big, big effort, you know, and he won, you know, $750,000 as well. So that's a good effort for him. And he went from 71 in the world at the top of the year to, you know, he was 17 before the, I don't, he was, sorry?
I think he's in the top 20 now, I think.
He got to 17, but now that he won the tournament, I'm not even sure. I don't know where he went to, but it was a tremendous effort from him. And then, you know, Azarenka and Badoza, you know, Ostapenko getting to the semi. There was some good tennis on the women's side too. So I find a lot of, you know, I thought there was a lot of good takeaways for people. It's like the players that, you know, and Dimitrov had an incredible tournament. He had two wins that were unbelievable. You know, and he played really, really well.
To play Medvedev is really, you know, you have to play at 100%. Can't do anything wrong there.
I mean, he was down a set and a break, 4-1, I believe, and he came all the way back to win that match. And he won another match, 7-6 in the third. That was like one of the best matches he's ever played in his career. I'm trying to remember who he beat, but he had an
I don't
incredible
remember.
tournament. He had an incredible tournament. It was a lot of fun.
Fun, yeah.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean, but it was just a little bit sparse. There's no doubt. It
no.
was sparse, crowd-wise.
But and next year is it back to its normal date, I assume.
Back to March, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, tell us, Craig, just about your tennis sort of journey. Where when did you start getting into tennis? Did you play growing up?
I had a dad who loved tennis. I grew up, I probably had a sawed off wooden racket when I was a little kid.
Okay.
And I was just an okay player. I played high school tennis. I never played college tennis or anything, but my dad ran a trip to the U.S. Open every year from Rhode Island, where I grew up. And
sorry, are you? I can't see you, but are you eating the cookies right now?
No.
Okay.
No. So my dad.
Yeah.
So my dad, took us to the U.S. Open. There was a big tournament in Philadelphia I remember going to. And, back then it was different. The players would, play a day with the kids. So I remember being on the court with, Peter Fleming and John McEnroe. And, there was a tournament in Boston at Longwood. And then I grew up in Rhode Island, so the Tennis Hall of Fame is there. And, the Tennis Hall of Fame being there, I was a ball kid there, and I spent a lot of time, in tennis from the time I was a kid. So then when I finished college, I moved to New York. I was teaching tennis, my first job out of college, and I essentially answered an ad that came across the fax machine there, and from a group that was customizing and stringing the rackets for the pro players. And Agassi had a problem with his rackets that these guys fixed. And, I ended up, when I was 23, 24 parts of those years, traveling with Andre. So it's kind of how my tennis background became sort of unusual and a little bit unique,
So
I've literally been to 40 US Opens, and I'm 50. I've been to a lot of US Opens. Yeah.
All of them. I obviously know that you spent some couple of years more or less to tour and string with Andre Agassi. How was that experience? Was it just work, and or did you get to know him a little bit? Or
I had a chat with him and his wife quickly,
Steffi.
Steffi on Monday night, which was kind of fun. But yeah, no, I mean, nice. Yeah, but yeah, but yeah, no, we. I had a good quick moment, and it was a couple of years, and it was cool. It was very neat, and we did a lot of neat things. But watching that guy go to work every day was, you can't. I had to sort of suppress my excitement because I was working, right? Like I was just part of the team, but when you're doing that, you almost had to pinch yourself. You'd be on.
And I guess that's where you also made a lot of your contacts that you're using now. Am I correct?
Yeah, I know pretty much everyone. Yeah, I feel like I know everyone in pro tennis from those years. Okay. And I shortly after I did that job, I worked in television partially because of my tennis background, and I know people through TV as well. In tennis, but a huge amount of my relationships are from being a tennis racket technician for Jay's Custom Stringing. Jay Schweid was the guy, and the famous Roman was my sensei, I guess you'd say.
That is that Roman Prokes, the
yeah, he's Roman,
yeah, okay. You just going back a little bit on Andre, when you were working for him, and one of the things when I read his biography, which was very good, really enjoyed it. But I think this applies to many people I've spoken to. you just get to a point where out of the blue he reveals that he's got a wig and you're shocked. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that. Nope. That's okay. I ran around with him in 90, I think 97, 98, and a little in 99 or 98. I think 97, 98, and a piece of 99, and that was it.
Okay.
And that stuff happened like in 93, I think. I think I was in college when he played. Right. Or I might have even been in high school because he played Andres Gomez in the French Open final, and that's where he revealed that it was a hairpiece.
Yeah. That was really amazing. But and then you hear a lot of our stories, which I'm sure 99% are made up. But I need to ask this as well. I don't know who told me this, but is it true that before a match, if you know, he would sit on his bed without his shoes on and he'd have his coach or whoever was there put the shoes and tie them up for him? Was that total BS?
I never heard that, and I never heard that, and I don't
never heard that. Okay.
No.
Okay. No. Okay. No. I just wanted to find out about that. Anyway, that so yeah. So that's apart from that experience. Obviously, you've been involved in so many other things. Let's jump to your podcast. As I said earlier, it started with the Under Review tennis podcast, which is the one that I started listening to. And now it's called the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast. You're obviously the host and the founder. First of all, why did you decide to do a podcast on tennis?
Well, you know, I was never really able to find a lane that sort of sated my, you know, I was never really able to find a lane in tennis that, I don't know, sort of filled my skill set or kind of spoke to my skill set, I guess. And I never had any interest in being a broadcaster or really anyone in front of a camera or on a microphone. I sort of prided myself on being behind the camera and behind the microphone, but you know, the jobs were few and far between. I always assumed that I could never get a job broadcasting because I just assumed that it would always, you know, to be in competition with, you know, Tracy Austin and Pam Shriver and John McEnroe and Patrick McEnroe and Brad Gill, like there would just be no shot. So I never even bothered. And I just, at a friend's suggestion, said, you know, the podcast game was getting hot and, you know, he knew that I had this kind of, you know, sort of like immense and interesting tennis background, suggested it. And away we went, you know, we did, I think about 65 shows. And now I think I've done about 40 something shows on the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast, which is the I'm involved with.
Why did you decide to change the name just to freshen
my
it up?
My partner, my partner lost interest and we were like unable to sort of figure out an adequate breakup. So I just made a new show because it was sort of unfortunate, but I'm good on the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast. Under Review was a paltry name to begin with. You know, all these podcasts have these, you know, very like sort of double entendre names like Under Review or the Tennis Podcast and stuff. So people kept saying, man, you should do a podcast with just your name so people get to know your name. And I said, and I was hesitant to do that until I got new logos made, and the logos, you know, made me realize that it was a good name.
Your logo's great. Your logo's, I think it's fantastic. Whoever did it, it's very nice. I've listened to many podcasts on tennis, and one thing I must say is they kind of fall into, I don't know if you agree, but they fall into three categories. You get the people who just do the interviews. So they have somebody, a coach, a player, whatever, somebody interesting, and they interview them. Then you get the ones that actually just talk about what's going on in tennis. So if there's Indian Wells or Paris Open, whatever, they'll say who's playing, who played well, and they'll have those discussions, blah, blah, blah. And then there's the more the technical ones, I find, like, you know, how to hit the backhand and how to be mentally strong and all these kinds. They're called kind of instructional. Yeah. Now, to be honest, lately, I mean, after a while, they become very repetitive. So you lose a lot of interest, and because there's so much you can also. They're very repetitive, to be honest. And then I don't want to listen to somebody telling me what happened in the Indian Wells because I already saw it. And so it's not, and it usually comes after anyway. So I find that also a bit boring. But just to get back to your podcast, I think your podcast it's much nicer when you listen to an interview and you're interviewing either a player or a coach or somebody. I love the ones you do with the agents as well. I forgot his name. You interviewed a German agent.
Dirk Hordorf.
Yes, Hordorf. That was great.
You know why? That happened because I had Janko Tipsarevic on my show, and I had kept, and Dirk Hordorf's name had kept coming up, you know, with Janko, and I reached out, and I reached out, and I had a good chat with Dirk. The thing about my show that I think is good is that I'm a very tough critic on myself. Really, when people ask me what's your favorite show, I always tell them, I said, listen, you know, I like all the shows for different reasons. And I think that they're all very interesting. I think different people's journeys in tennis and their lives in tennis, the guests I've had are like, I find them totally fascinating, and I'm definitely proud of that. But yeah, no, I occasionally will listen to the tennis podcast from time to time. I think that they're an anomaly in this podcast in terms of the fact that they're essentially like sharing their observations and opinions.
Yes.
And I find that their analysis and their conversations are like highly listenable and like really spot on. I think that they do a very good job. I like the Racket Magazine podcast. I like Caitlin and Renee. I do think that, you know, that there's probably like too many. But you know, I never had any other idea other than I was going to try to interview, you know, basically my Rolodex, right? Like just the people who I think I can get on the show who are the most interesting people in the sport. So yeah, I've been fortunate. I came up with the format of the show, almost immediately. Like there was really no,
just
there was no real, there was really no pivot. Yeah. I was able to, I listened to a guy's podcast that was a hockey podcast and they had three periods. So I said, oh, okay, I'm going to do five sets. And I knew exactly what I wanted to do right from the beginning. So that was good because, you know, we came out of the box with Brad Gilbert, and then
he's quite a regular on your. Well, he seems to be quite.
He's my most recurring guest.
Yeah.
and I bring him, I ask him to come in, and he's always been pretty cool, but yeah. he's my most recurring guest, and that's like, maybe a couple times a year. Not too much more than that. No. I don't really, I try not to double up too much, but the only guest I've had on more than twice is Roman Prokus. He's been on twice, and I'm gonna have the doctor who the foot doctor, Zach. Okay. I'm gonna do a shoe special for 2021. I'm gonna do an end of the year shoe special soon.
Okay, that will be interesting. Yeah, because I find there's so many other topics that, as a tennis enthusiast, I'd like to know. If you hear one interview with, I'm just making up now, like Paul Anacone, and then you hear it on another podcast, it's always more or less the same things that gets asked. But nobody's going into, I don't know. I'd like to listen to the guy who cuts the grass at Wimbledon. I would find that very interesting, but maybe it's just me. But there's a lot of other areas of tennis that are not really explored, or the agents. You really get a lot of those on, or there's as you say, a shoe manufacturer or something like that. So I'd like to see more of that. I think that would be very interesting. But going back to your podcast, I've noticed also you've a bit slowed down. Before you seem to turn them out a bit quicker. Is there a reason why maybe you're doing a bit less or less frequent?
Yeah, you know what? Even my most ardent listeners weren't getting to 4 a month. They were getting to 3. And then, I'm trying to do like a couple a month is sort of where I want to be. I'd like to pick up the pace. We'll see. This year has been funny as well. Between the sort of uncertainty of COVID and tennis, and I basically also started using my Instagram like much more vigorously. So it's like my podcast is one thing, and then it's kind of my social media is a place where I'm kind of play testing some different things, I started pretending that I'm the head of an imaginary tennis academy about a year ago.
Yeah. And I'm going to get to that later because I need to ask you about that. But
the podcast, I haven't quite been able to find that sweet spot where people, how many tennis podcasts do people want a month kind of thing. So okay. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay. Do you still enjoy doing it?
Oh, yeah. It's funny. Whenever I put out an episode, I'm always like, really, I feel very accomplished and really happy. to be totally honest with you. No, I do. And I've it's been like, for me, it's been, mostly a home run. Like my guests have enjoyed it. My listeners have enjoyed it just at Indian Wells and at the US Open. People, see me and they want to talk or they want to take a picture. So I've enjoyed kind of this new version of my tennis life. My thing was that I never thought anyone would care what I thought about tennis because there are others that have had much more significant lives in tennis and are better players and coaches. Mm. But people kept asking me a lot, like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? So.
Yeah.
At some point during this past year, I kind of started letting it fly and on my Instagram page, which is CSHAP Tennis Pod. So CSHAP and Tennis Pod. So I kind of do these like emergency press conferences where I just kind of shoot the shit, sort of pick a. Yeah. I kind of pick a, pick something I want to talk about, something out of my mind, and I share my opinions and some thoughts. But I do not do that on my show. My show, they're separate. I don't mix the two. Yeah. The show is the show, and the person that you see kind of going a little bit more verbose, a little bit more crazy on my social media is a whole different thing. But it's all a work in progress, man. I'm just trying to figure it out a little bit. Yeah.
I can see. But in your podcast, do you find that the guests you have, do you find that after a few minutes you understand if you're going to click with them? And tell me, were there some that you just really enjoy speaking to, and were there some that maybe were a bit more difficult?
Listen, man, you know, I don't joke. I prepare for my shows. I do research. I make some phone calls. I try to find some interesting wrinkles. And my feeling is that the devil has been in the details, and that the guests can see that I know what I'm talking about. I have done some interesting research, or, you know, like they see the effort, and when they see the effort and they see that I'm know what I'm talking about, they enjoy that. And to be honest, I have not, at least not to my face, or it hasn't gotten back to me that they did not like that. The only feedback I ever got was from a Davis Cup captain who said that, you know, that the interview went a little long. I think Judy Murray kind of felt like the interview went a little long. But for the most part, I've been cool, man. People have always really liked the shows, and I got thousands of listeners all over the world. So,
definitely.
I'm happy about that.
You're doing a great job. Going back to now talking about your, because I obviously follow you on Instagram, and you're very active on the social media. What's this Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast Tennis Academy that
as you know, it's almost impossible to get somebody to see what you're – it's almost impossible to get someone to listen to your podcast. you can tell them about it. You can put it in your phone. You can send them a link. You can – you know, you can put a picture of a girl in a t-shirt with you. It's almost impossible to get somebody to listen to your podcast. And I basically, you know, it's also hard, you know, also, you know, during COVID, I thought I was going to, you know, be able to, you know, really bank a lot of interviews. Yeah, and I felt like I wasn't getting a lot of cooperation. Okay. And I was on the court with some friends, and everybody was playing tennis during COVID, right? The popularity of the sport apparently grew exponentially in terms of people playing, because it was really one of the only things people could do, right? You couldn't go to the gym. And so everybody wanted to play tennis. So I kind of would be out there with some friends and they were lousy, and I started yelling and screaming at them because I wasn't in the mood to play. And all of a sudden I kind of had this, I don't know, like kind of idea that I would just start, like I have an academy, like everything I do is an academy, but there's no academy. It's in my mind. So that I just started, I basically, it's just a figment of my imagination, the academy.
I just started
yelling and screaming like at my friends, and then, you know, people thought it was hilarious, and a lot of people actually think it's like the greatest thing I've ever done, is to to like be the head of this academy. And then
Looks like
one of my one sorry. Sorry, yeah.
no, I was just gonna say it looks like a heck of a fun of an academy. But
Oh
is
yeah,
it
we have the most fun. We have the most fun. You know, we our academy is it's cultural. It's also, it's a lot of different things. You know, we eat good food. We practice. We play. Also, too, like I kind of got tired of seeing the top court advertisements. You know, like
Okay.
I felt like the players were only. The only thing they were doing all year was like shooting these top court episodes, and I just decided I was going to make them my enemy. So I started saying like, "Listen, man, you can watch a video in your house, or you could be out here with us working hard, you know." And I just kind of mess around like that. So I sort of made them my enemy on Instagram. I decided that I was just going to try to take the piss out of them. And the thing that's funny is that the more crazy I've gone on my Instagram, the more attention I've gotten in terms of my podcast. So I made a bill. I had a billboard down in Indian Wells. I have a t-shirt. For the t-shirt, it's a long sleeve t-shirt because the name of the academy is so long, it only can fit on the sleeves. Like you couldn't fit it on the short sleeves. So the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast, Tennis Academy. Yeah. So that's it. It's just a figment of my imagination. But it could end up become, but it might become real one day. We'll see.
Well, you
So like,
know, I think again there you've got a great thing going. I think there's a market for people, especially a certain age. You know, like you say you don't do, I mean, I'm just going to mention one of the things I saw. You say that these hand-fed drills, they're useless. And you know, I remember seeing that, you know, and that you have to get on
Well,
the
listen,
court.
I mean, if you're like, if you're 30, if your best tennis years are behind you, or you're just planning to play, like, who the hell wants to hit balls out of a pro's hand that you're paying, $150 an hour to? It's like, come on, man. Like, we didn't ever, like, I get that, like, Patrick Mouratoglou does it with Serena or, there's like, but I don't want to spend one second doing that crap. It's like, man, like just, there's like a lot of drills and, if you can hit the ball over the net 20 times in a row and keep the ball on the court, that's my drill. You know,
That's
like if you know where to stand in doubles and where to play, that's my drill. Like I want people to be on the court that can get their serve in, that can put their server, move their server around the box, that are trying to improve, that know how to run, that move their feet. You know what I mean? I don't wanna,
Is it a bunch of friends
I don't have
that picked up?
I don't have a lot of palate for all that other crap. Yeah, no, I've got they're my I've got people that I play with that are my friends. I've got some that are better, some are better than others. And it's all just kind of we're like they say, we're just kind of taking the piss. We're just kind of having a good time with that. But yeah, the academy is the whole the academy is based in my brain.
And another thing, it seemed like you spent a lot of time in Colombia. Am I right? And that's also where your academy went.
I
Went
did.
followed
I
you.
spent a fair amount of between the Trump stuff here and the COVID. I just was like, I just wanted to leave the town for a little while. So last November, this time last year, I left town and one of my buddies came and we we that's where that was really where the academy started. That was kind of
Maybe
the beginning. Yeah, and I use some of my connections in South America to practice with some really good players. And that's kind of where it all, it's kind of where it all began. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. Quickly also, I mean, you've done a whole lot of other stuff as well, like, broadcasting, you write stories, tennis stories. You've also,
well, I've written two. Let me stop you. I've written two. One of the, yeah, I'm a documentary filmmaker, sort of producer, yeah, director type by trade. And
I was going to say that.
Over the years, I've did a documentary on Andre and on Pete for the Tennis Channel, which I think were pretty well received. I've done a lot of different tennis programming and a lot of different things in really all sports. But, you know, boxing paid my bills for a long time. I did the shows that would preview the big fights.
Yes.
And it took me around the world. I spent an inordinate amount of time with Manny Pacquiao from probably 2013 to 2016. But the Tennis Racket magazine, which I, you know, urge everyone to subscribe to, it comes out four times a year. I can't say enough about them. They really kind of worked me back into tennis, because when I met them, you know, I saw that there are some kind of like-minded people that enjoy tennis the way I do. It's a certain way where.
Yeah.
You like to play at like a good level, but also like to watch pro tennis and think that it's kind of been, I don't know, it's like sort of an undervalued commodity, you know. I don't think that tennis and the way that it's promoted and broadcast has done it justice. So I met them, that's what kind of worked me back in. I wrote an article for them. I'm listed as a contributor. I directed a couple shoots for them with Nick Kyrgios, did a cool night of storytelling and Q&A. It was a ticketed event. No cameras, no phones were allowed at a brewery in Brooklyn, right before the U.S. Open. And then we did it again with Azarenka, a couple weeks ago. Azarenka had a great result after she participated, which I was happy about, because Nick did not. Nick got the next night he got beat like 4-4 in love, I think, or 4-2. He got buried by Bautista Agut, that wasn't ideal. But yeah, my day job is that, and then. I really spent the last few months from right before the U.S. Open. Actually, I'd say like in July when I was, Tacchini sponsors my show. So we went to Goron's induction in Newport, Rhode Island. And from that time, since then, I've been like pretty active, like trying to promote. More active trying to promote than banking interviews. Although I'm trying to think. I did. I recorded an episode with Misha Zverev. I recorded an episode with Christo von Rensburg.
I enjoyed that.
That happened because I actually got invited to broadcast the Davis Cup tie between Venezuela and South Africa.
South Africa. Yeah, I actually listened to you. We obviously here in South Africa, they streamed it, and I listened to you. And yeah, again, you were very good, very very informed and entertaining. But you don't do a lot of broadcasting.
I never thought I could get the job, and nobody ever invited me to do it before. So when I got it, I did it. That was the first time I ever did that. Okay. And it was the South Africa Venezuela tie, and same thing. Like I played it back, And I was like, oh, I could do that job. You know, I just don't ever think I wouldn't want to do it at the at that low of a level, though. I wouldn't want to do it. I'd want to do it at a certain level of sort of prominence.
Yes, yes.
And I don't think I could really compete with, you know, the Leif Shireses and the Nicholas Pereira. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of broadcasters now in tennis, but we'll see, you know. I'll never say never.
You never know. Yeah.
Yeah, listen, if the U.S. Open invited me to broadcast for the international feed or whatnot, you know, I would definitely entertain that, but I don't want to be out at like challengers and, you know, the middle of nowhere, whispering at the side of the court because if you talk too loud, you're the only person there, and that's not that interesting to me.
What's your impression of Lloyd Harris? Because obviously you got to watch him quite a bit. I don't think Venezuela was very competitive, obviously. You know, I think he won. It could have even been 6-0, 6-0. I don't remember now. But what do you think of him?
Well, I've seen him now play. I saw him play at the Open. I saw him play at the Davis Cup. I saw him play in San Diego, and I saw him play in Indian Wells. And you know, I talked to Christo in length about him on my show, and I don't know how he. It says a lot about pro tennis that a guy as good as him. Like can lose matches. That's how good he is. He's so good. It's his athleticism is incredible.
He's such a great athlete that he seems to have a huge amount of time. The amount of time he has to execute, to get to the ball, to hit his volleys, to smash that serve, and the action he gets on his serve and his forehand is unbelievable. It's like really, really impressive. So yeah, I love that kid. I love the way he plays tennis. Seen him play some shaky matches since I, you know, saw him so dominant at Davis Cup. But for the most part, I'm like totally high on him. And I love the fact that, you know, Xavier Molise, who's also been on my show, you know, thinks the world of him as well.
Yeah. Did you know that today they played doubles together in Antwerp in the ATP 250 and they won their first match?
I think that is just because of obviously Molise is Belgian, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're just trying to do a fun thing. But yeah, I'm not surprised. Lloyd's watching him play doubles was unbelievable.
Yeah. Talking about, again, just going back to broadcasting, I just wanted to ask you a question. Because I recently also had Robbie Koenig as a guest, and he's working now for Amazon Prime UK. And he was saying to me the average age of tennis viewership in the UK, the average age is 61. Do you think tennis has to change or has to adapt to bring in a younger generation to view? Because if they don't, I mean, there's so much competition, so much other things you can watch and look at and distractions nowadays. But what does tennis have to do you think, if nobody's watching it anymore or as much, especially the younger generation?
Well, I'm very... I'll start by saying I don't know. I'm not an expert in that, but I will tell you, there's the dearth of sort of storytelling about these players is what I would describe as problematic. Nobody knows who these guys are. All these networks are playing live tennis, but they're not.
I'm completely with you there. I'm completely.
Yeah, they're not telling the stories of the players. I have learned though that the WTA is going to be rolling out some kind of a show that's going to be, you know, following some players. You know, here in the United States, the Tennis Channel is the preeminent home for tennis. And there's, again, there's a dearth of storytelling. They simply show live tennis. And, you know, if you talk to 10 people, and I'd say, oh, you know, this is on Tennis Channel, they'd say, oh, I didn't even know there was Tennis Channel. So,
yeah. You know,
so I don't know I don't pretend to know the machinations of the economics of it all, and like how it makes sense to have, you know, tournaments that have no people in the seats, or how it makes sense to have, you know, a TV network that no one knows about showing the tennis with no big commercials on it. So I don't know how it all works, but I know that you know,
it
people
it
watch
could
the
be
Olympics
made...
and stuff because of the stories of the athletes that, you know.
Yes, I think I kind of completely understand where you're coming from, and that's a bit what bothers me as well. I kind of think it's too nearly clinical at tennis. They present it, there's a match. This guy's number one, this guy's number 15, and that's it. And then you watch the match. But there's so much more around that they could include, and they could market it, make it more interesting. I mean, I think I might be wrong, but they could do a series on tennis academies. I think maybe I saw that might be happening. They could, you know, do more documentaries. By the way, your documentary on Agassi, I watched it. Well, I watched it a long time ago. It's excellent. And there's a lack of all this other things that go around. And it's, in my opinion, a pity. So I think I completely agree with you there. But what do you think... I was going to say, you made some documentaries. You also did one on Patrick Mouratoglou, am I correct?
I think in 2019, I went to the Mouratoglou Academy for a few days and shot with Patrick and put together... I'd say like a short featurette about Patrick. I wouldn't call that a documentary. I'd call it a documentary style featurette about him, and sort of a profile piece about him. But yeah, I like Patrick a lot, actually. Sometimes people find him to be a little bit of a grandstander, self-promoter, but he's got a good way about him. I like him. So I don't, you know, I enjoy that. Okay.
And I was one of those people. I mean, obviously you don't know the guy, but when you look at him on TV or whatever, he does come across as a bit, I don't know, not likable. But I've ended up really slowly enjoying him, and especially lately, he does these little clips. I don't know if you've seen them, of 30 seconds a minute, where he just talks about one specific thing about tennis. And In a few words, you can understand why he's such a great coach. I mean, he explains it in such simplicity and makes so much sense. It's excellent. But anyway, Craig, there's a lot of other things, but just two quick things I want to ask you. You also seem to enjoy your music, especially on Instagram. You put a lot of songs on your clips, etc. Do you listen to a bit of everything, or what's
your sort of? I think that my musical selections. I appreciate that, Gianluca. You've got you continue to display your great taste in every But yeah, no, I think that my musical selections on my Instagram stories is an accurate depiction of, you know, what I like and what I know about. I'll throw a little Rachmaninoff somewhere, or I'll play some reggae music, some hip hop. I like, you know, I have a taste for, you know, cool beats and tasty treats.
Yeah, you seem to like a lot of hip hop that I also enjoy, but yeah, it's always nice to listen to that. And then, am I wrong here? Are you also a bit into crypto?
I opened a Robinhood account in an effort to see what all the kids were to see what all the kids were talking about, but I don't know too much about that stuff. I don't profess to be. I'm holding a little Ethereum. I'm holding some Ethereum, and that's about it. I don't profess to know too much about that whole program.
Okay. Yeah, no, same here. But I just saw you mentioning it, so I was just curious. And any next plans or projects you have? Has you got anything sort of?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to Guayaquil with my man Vicente Munoz. We're going to go see Andres Gomez first week of November at the Guayaquil Challenger. I'm looking forward to that. And then that's it, man. I think I'm just going to kind of wind out the year. You know, I've been really struggling with a sort of the touch Achilles, my left Achilles. So I need to kind of turn the corner on that. So that's it, man. Okay. Just try to turn the corner on the year and see what 2022 is going to bring.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, Craig, I won't keep you too long. It's been a while, but I've got the rapid fire that everybody seems to have, but hopefully mine is a bit different. Are you ready?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, what's your first memory of tennis?
I feel like my first memory in tennis is having that sawed-off wooden racket when I was probably 5 or 6 years old.
Okay. Define what type of player you are if somebody's never seen you.
I'm a serve and volleying 4.0 that has flashes of out of shape 4.0 that has flashes of 5.0 tennis from time to time.
Okay. If you have to compare,
and I've got an adequate backhand slice, one hand. I've been playing with a new Yonex that I seem to be able to roll my backhand a little bit better with. I think for my level, I've got a pretty good serve. I can move it all the way around the box. My slice serve out wide into the deuce court is good. The Yonex is I've been able to kind of.
Which one is that? The E-Zone.
Not the E-Zone. It's the other one now. It's the one that's like a purple and green.
Okay. All right.
It's like purple and green. I think it's. Is it V-Core?
It could be. Yeah, I'm not sure. I must say, I'm not sure. But
I've got this new one, and I feel like I can play pretty well with it right now. I tell people if I'm playing good tennis, I can play pretty good tennis. Those days seem to be fewer and farther between these days, unfortunately. But
okay,
I don't know. I think I play 4-0 tennis. I think if I could get healthy and get in better shape, I could play like 4 or 5 tennis. I'm almost 50 years old, and I turned 50 in 6 weeks or so, but
congratulations.
When I'm playing well, I feel I'm like pretty happy with my tennis. Being injured has been really, really difficult because I'm constantly managing these injury and it's brutal.
And tell me about it. I think I'm more or less your age, and I've had a tennis elbow for the first time ever in my life 3 months ago, and it's not going away. So it's always something. There's always something. But anyway. tell us, if you had to compare your game to what player right now, or even of the past, resembles your game the most, if you have to pick a player?
Oh, I don't... Pass. I pass. I can't think of...
Fine. Okay. Current favorite male player or and female player?
I don't have any favorites, man. I just pride myself on being an insider. I don't have a favorite. I love watching Yannick Sinner. I love watching Seb Korda. This kid Jensen Brooksby, I think, is the real deal.
The youngster.
Well, I mean, he's fastly gonna approaching becoming the number one American. I mean, he absolutely routined Riley Opelka yesterday. He finaled Newport. He semied Washington. He had an unbelievable run at the U.S. Open. He beat Taylor Fritz. He beat Aslan Karatsev at the U.S. Open. He took a set from the Joker. Now he he's just been unbelievable. I really get a kick out of him because he's got a very shaky form on his serve, but he plays really good tennis. I was there courtside for Alcaraz and Steph Tsitsipas. I actually predicted that match on my one of my emergency press conferences from the U.S. Open, and
that was a great match.
Yeah, it was a great match, and Alcaraz is the real deal. I watched him. And on the women's side, I really enjoyed watching Leila Fernandez last week. Mm. I thought she was really good. I thought she was a really good player. Very crafty. Women right now, I watched a lot of what I thought was like really bad women's tennis. Like the first week of the U.S. Open, and then even the second week, the semis, I thought that Sakkari and Sabalenka played like really, really bad. I was kind of disgusted. Mm. And then, I didn't necessarily think Raducanu and Leila Fernandez were that good, but I'm starting to come around on it all. I'm a big fan of women's tennis. Nobody really right now has got me like super excited.
Not yet.
But I probably not everything you wanted to hear, but it sounds like almost there's a way there's been like a lost generation where like, Sloan has had like really up and down years and results. Madison Keys never really put together the career people thought she'd put through.
There's not a dominant figure after Serena.
Sabalenka plays unreal, and then she just sprays balls everywhere. Sakkari seems like gets really nervous. Ostapenko won the French and then never played very well since. So, I don't know. I don't really know what to say, but I don't have a favorite player per se.
I
like Danielle Collins. I like the way she plays tennis. I'm trying to have her on my show soon.
Okay. Oh, that's nice. This is another nice one here. List the big three from your favorite to least favorite.
Full pass. I don't have any interest in the big three. I think Rafa is like really one of the most dominant athletes of our. I think all three of them have been totally amazing. I like all three of them. I've been fortunate. I've had dinner with Novak. I don't know Roger or Rafa, but I've had the opportunity to watch them play in person, I just think it's amazing that we were able to have them for as long as we did.
Best match you have ever seen? Can be any level.
I'm not sure, but I tell you, man, that Murray Tiafo match that was last night in Antwerp was unbelievable. Three tiebreakers was incredible. I've seen a lot of I've been fortunate. I've been to a lot of big matches, a lot of unbelievable tennis. You know, I was in Hartford, Connecticut in the 80s when, you know, McEnroe, you know, when Boris Becker put the German team on his back and Becker and Steech beat McEnroe and Mayotte, you know, during Davis Cup. I'd have to go through it. I've been to a lot of big tennis matches, man, particularly at the U.S. Open.
Okay. Best tournament in the world?
I'm partial to Rome because I love Rome.
What's so nice about it? The tournament or the city or everything?
I mean, I think that that Pietrangeli, the court, and being in Italy is amazing. The intimacy of the tournament is very cool. We got an Airbnb in Trastevere and just walked through Rome on our way to the tennis. And, you know, there's just nothing like being in Italy, you know, in May, right before the French Open. It's like a very cool thing to do. Highly recommend.
Okay.
And the pizza Italio is good there, man.
Dad, tell me about it. Trastevere has got a lot of nice trattorias to go eat.
But the pizza Italia at the tennis is really, really good.
Pizza,
outstanding.
Like the square pieces in Italy.
The square that you buy by the pound, exactly. The kilo.
Favorite surface?
Clay. I love clay.
Clay. What strings tension do you use? Do you know?
I get whatever I get for free, and I usually just take the recommended, like around probably 52 pounds.
Okay.
That's about, I think, 25 kilos, something like that. 24 kilos, something like that.
Favorite all-time racket? Do you have one?
I don't really have one. The Wilson Pro Staff, was a great racket. I don't really have a racket. I'm not really like that, man, I gotta say. I never had the kind of tennis results or career or anything that made me think of. It's just not the way I kind of roll.
Okay. What is the most amazing tennis experience you've ever had?
You know,
if you had to pick one.
I had dinner with Andre and Brad one night in Adelaide, where Brad actually got sick. He didn't feel good, so he went home, and me and Andre just had dinner together, and I just kind of started peppering him with questions about him, his tennis, and his career, and that was pretty unforgettable. You know, I was probably 22, and he might have been like 23, 23 and a half. I think he's about a year older than me. And then I think that same year, you know, we played Monte Carlo, and he lost to Pete, and he was pissed. And I'd found a sushi restaurant in Monte Carlo, like back before sushi was like on every corner, you know, so he called my room and he said, "Hey man, I heard you found a sushi spot." So we went to dinner there, and you know, I've been fortunate. I've done some cool things in tennis. You know, but those are come to mind right now. They're fairly unforgettable.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And that brings me very well to the next question. If you have to book a restaurant and invite three players, any male or female, any era, which restaurant do you book and who do you invite?
Well, for me, I'd invite Arthur Ashe. I'd invite – If it's about who I'd want to eat with, right? I guess I'd invite Ash, Borg, and Lendl. Yeah, that's who it would be, those three.
Okay.
And I think the restaurant would be, man, you know, there used to be a great place that went out of business on 67th Street, I think, or 64th Street on the east side, called Il Vagabondo. And there was a couple bocce courts inside the restaurant. And yeah, I think, and my dad loved that restaurant. I think that's a great question, actually. I may have to steal that question from you, Gianluca. I think that I'd like to take Ash, Borg, and Lendl to Il Vagabondo for a night of veal parmesans and bocce.
And that's in New York, right? Because some
yeah, that's the Upper East Side. It's out of, it's no longer, but that was the spot. Okay. It was a cool spot.
Okay. Do you like cooking?
I just made a chicken soup this morning at 6 a.m., Gianluca.
Okay.
I'm not a great cook, but I do a couple things well. It's my mother's recipe.
You enjoy it. And what's your favorite food?
I like a lot of different stuff. The same way I like different music, I like a lot of different food.
Different stuff. Okay. Ask yourself a question and answer it.
Ask myself a question and answer it. What are you doing right now? I am watching a little tennis, and I'm going to call my accountant, and then I'm going to try to coordinate a couple podcast interviews. That is it, my man.
Okay. Craig, thanks a lot. Sorry if it was a bit too long.
No. That was great. That worked out perfectly. Thank you.
Okay. But thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. As I said, I'm a big fan of yours. And continue doing the podcasts because they're really worth listening to. And yeah, they're great to listen to.
John, thanks Luka, a lot. This was the highlight of my week, my man. Thank you, and have a terrific time in South Africa this week.
Okay, thanks a lot. Keep well.
Okay, ciao, ciao.
Ciao, 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 ciao.